755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome to 755 is real, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Welcome back to 755 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic, with my co-host back, Eric O'Flaherty. What's happening, Eric? How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. How you doing, Dave?
Doing all right, hanging in there. How's the light in this room? I just realized it might be it. Am I all right?
You look great.
I didn't know if my light, it's sun coming through this hotel room. It's hard to adjust. Well, here we are, what, 2 days? What's this, Tuesday? Wednesday? 3 days from the trade deadline, Eric. And things aren't a whole lot more clear than they were last time we talked about the trade deadline. I am told from people who know that the Braves are still trying to make moves. I know a lot of their fans are getting frustrated by their kind of treading water, if you will. But the fact is they haven't lost any ground on the first place Mets. And we saw again last night, anybody that watched the Mets play two games yesterday against the Braves and came away thinking there's no way the Braves can catch them. I don't know what you're watching, because I don't think the Mets are that good. They're a good team, but they're certainly catchable unless they go out and make a huge move.
No, this isn't the Dodgers or the Astros of a few years back where you couldn't even think about winning your division. I mean, I know it's got to be frustrating for people, you know, watching and hoping they get back in it, but they're still in it. You know, I mean, there's teams that are 10 games over 500 and they're seven games back.
Yeah.
You know, so if you've been watching the team play, it's been frustrating, but they're still in it and there's no clear favorite. I mean, the Mets could have had, you know, a rough April and the Braves would be in first place. You know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, and the thing is, coming out of the break, we knew this was going to be a brutal stretch. Yeah. All these first place teams or second place, all winning teams. I mean, you face the Padres, the Rays, the Phillies at home, and now the Mets at home. And the Braves are right where they were. They're playing 500 ball. They win, lose. Literally, they alternate of win and loss every game since the All-Star break. And that's against really good teams, or some really good teams, and just good teams, but not bad teams.
No.
So they're not gaining ground, but they're not losing ground, and they're doing it without a lot of key guys, and they can look ahead and know that they've got Darno coming back in a maybe a couple, 3 weeks. Enoa coming back right after that. Ian Anderson wasn't hurt bad, so he's throwing again. He's going to be on the mound this week. He could be back starting within 2 weeks. There's a lot of reason to think the Braves are going to get better. And that's, I'm not even taking into account moves, which I think they're going to make a move or two. They're trying to. How significant it'll be, I don't know. But I think they will add at least one reliever. And I know they're trying to add a bat. They really need to add a bat. I mean, the bottom half of the lineup is the fact that they're playing as well as they are with the bottom four guys in their lineup, including the pitcher, being such mediocre to bad hitters is impressive. The fact that they're still in it without Acuña. I mean,
I was watching yesterday and the bottom half of that lineup was something like, you know, 0 for 8 with 5 strikeouts, plenty of bats that mattered. And that's hard, man. When you can't get to that bottom half of the lineup and it's just like, you're just turning an inning over. It's hard to win like that. I mean, that was what made the team so good last year, was there was just no breaks.
The depth of that lineup last year. I mean, you had at various times, you had guys like Ozzie and Dansby and Riley in the bottom half of the lineup last year.
Yeah.
The inning, I think last night you probably referenced, was they started an inning with 2 singles, and then they went to the bottom half of the order, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. It's like, you know. 2 singles start the end. They didn't even move them over, you know, didn't do anything. So, but, I mean, it's frustrating as hell, but I know there's a lot to like I said, about not just what's coming back, but I'm really impressed by what Toussaint's done in his 2 starts, coupled with his last 2 rehab starts, which were dynamic. And then what Mueller has done. I've seen enough Mueller now, five starts, to think there's nothing fluky about what he's doing. And I'm not worried that he's going to regress to being, you know, a 6-7 walk guy like he was at times in the minors. This guy looks like he's figured some things out, and his stuff is really nasty.
He's not overthrowing. You know, I know that when I watch him. I don't, he sits 93, 94, 95, and mm-hmm. you know he's got 96, 97 in the tank. But, I mean, the best example of him just staying within himself yesterday was when he faced Alonso, and I think it was the bottom of the fifth, and that was the whole game on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
You got first pitch breaking ball, and, you know, remember Leo Mazzoni talking about superpower and how pitchers get in those big situations, they try to be better, they try to do more. Mm-hmm. First pitch breaking ball. Yeah, first pitch breaking ball in that situation, you don't want it to get hurt, and you're thinking you got to get a swing and miss if you're too amped up.
Yeah.
And he didn't overthrow it. He just threw the same breaking ball he's been throwing all game, down in the zone, got a ground ball, double play, get out of the inning. You know, that for me, he's showing that maturity as a pitcher that I think has derailed a few other dudes that have come up when they've got just as good of stuff and they get in those jams and they start trying to throw too hard or nibble. They get out of attack mode. That for me has been the most impressive thing, is even when he's been kind of on his heels a little bit, he still stayed within himself and just focused on making pitches.
Yeah. You don't see him rearing back and trying to throw 99, trying to hit 100 miles an hour. He's not glancing up at the scoreboard to see how hard he's throwing. None of those things you worry about young guys coming up, and he's sitting right at like 94, 95 instead. Yeah. And he's such a better pitcher when he does that. I've just been nothing but impressed, and he's ballsy, man. He does not back down. He had a couple of moments last night. That one you said, and when he struck out the polar bear, he had two big jams in the third and fifth innings that he got out of unscathed. So just impressive to see him, and to come back from the San Diego start, the one 5 days earlier where he threw like 89 pitches in four innings, and he said after that game, that's not going to work. I mean, I'm proud of myself for the damage control I had.
Yeah.
That's encouraging, but I can't throw 90 pitches in four innings. So that's going to get fixed before the next start. And he did it. He came back and was much more efficient last night. Threw 75 and went five innings, you know.
I just expected such a meathead when you were telling me about his weightlifting, you know, all this stuff he's doing. I was just, you know, I didn't get too excited about him because I figured it'd just be another guy coming up, throwing it as hard as he can, walking guys, doing the up and down thing. But it's been really refreshing and fun to watch a guy just come up and pitch, even with the stuff he has.
Yeah. And the thing is, the timing couldn't have been much better for the Braves. I mean, as far as they're having to get by without Ian Anderson, key part of everything they're doing. They've had to get by without Enoa for over 2 months. They thought they were going to have Soroka back midseason, so they thought they'd have Soroka right now, you know, back in form, that he'd be like a month into it and be back being Soroka. None of those things have happened. And so these guys stepping in right now has been crucial because the rotation keeps plugging along. The rotation has actually been a strength for the last month or two. You know, Charlie's pitching great. Smiley has pitched great after his first two bad months. Freed's, you know, since his IL stint, the second one has been fine. He's pitched really well, great couple of games, and really good as others. And then you add Toussaint and Mueller, and all of a sudden you're looking at actual depth. When you get Anderson back, you got six guys. And then you add Enoa, and it's going to allow you to put Enoa in the pen so he won't have to spend 3 or 4 weeks getting stretched out to start. So he could really help that pen, which needs some help. They need to add a reliever or two at the deadline, I think. But at least you also know you're going to add Enoa. And Enoa could be big in that pen, man.
Oh, yeah. He's got the confidence to pitch. I could see him pitch, setting up, you know, throwing late in games, big situations. He's definitely got that confidence.
And he's coming back from a hand thing, not an arm thing. So, I mean, it shouldn't take him a long time, I wouldn't think, to get back once he makes some rehab appearances or whatever and comes back. It's not like he's coming back from his shoulder or elbow,
right, where he's going to alter his mechanics. I mean, I don't know how it would affect you gripping the ball or what you change, you know, in that area. But it's not like, you know, a lot of times you come back from a shoulder or elbow injury, you start tweaking your mechanics and favoring the injury. I would think he wouldn't have to favor it too much.
My point is that with Toussaint and Mueller doing what they're doing, I think you've given you enough reason to be confident that they can continue this. You know now that you can add Ynoa, who is going to be who's pitching a game today at the complex down in Florida, his first game since the broken hand. You know now that you've got a reliever coming in Ynoa. I think you should focus. You can focus more on getting that bat and maybe one reliever at the deadline, but you don't have to go out and find two relievers or three relievers, because they really need to add a bat, man. If they could add a bat and a decent reliever, you know,
good. Well, if you add one bat and then you get Darno back, you know, that really changes the bottom of the lineup.
As good as those veteran catchers have done calling games and helping guys like Vogt last night, mm-hmm. really did a good job calling that game. As much as those guys have helped and filled, you know, the gap until you get back Darno, when you get Darno back, you get offense. Right now, it's not an automatic out from your catchers you know, maybe a single here, a single there, but they're not giving you much at all offensively. And Darno, if he can do what he did last year, come close to that when he was the best hitting catcher in the league last year. People forget just because he started a little slow this year, but he had started to come around before he got hurt. So we'll see where he is. But I talked to him in Philly and he looked good. I mean, physically he looks good, he looks strong. He's kept everything strong. You know, he didn't have atrophy or anything because he kept working on that, doing everything. As soon as he could work the left arm, he did. So, you know, but he was doing arm stuff even when the finger was – and when he wasn't able to use the hand. So
yeah,
you couldn't look at him and tell that he's coming back from, you know, it's like his arm isn't thin or anything.
Yeah. So, sometimes, you know, bad. They look like little noodles hanging off and the other one looks normal.
Yeah. So yeah, the game with Toussaint, I thought Tukey at Philly on Sunday, man, that was like a coming out party, and they lost the game because Arenola pitched like Arenola again. He has struggled at times this year, but Arenola looked great. But Toussaint went pitch for pitch with him, man, for seven innings. One run ball, 10 strikeouts with no walks. I mean, he was nasty. He was throwing some curveballs that Reese Hoskins was walking back to the dugout, shaking his head, going, okay, all right, kid. And then Bryce Harper, same thing, flailing at that curveball, that sweeping curveball he has that breaks off the plate. The first time through the order, those guys looked lost against that thing.
Yeah.
And then he gave up a couple of hits to start the second time, but he settled back in, which was really encouraging, and did fine after that. Seventh inning, fifth, sixth, and seventh inning, he had 2 strikeouts apiece in those innings, which I thought was a really big sign for a guy that's kind of struggled that second, third time through the order.
Well, yeah, especially that second or third time through. You know, when they've seen it, they know what he's working with. Mm-hmm. I think for me, you know, when I've seen Tukey struggle, it's just been kind of nibbling. And that's a hard lesson to learn. You know, if you've been hit hard a few times, you'll see guys kind of resort back to that. But he's got the stuff to challenge guys and come after them. And no walks. I mean, he's forcing them to swing the bat. And when you're behind in the count, they can eliminate that curveball. Once you get ahead and they have to respect the fastball, and then it's a curveball, you know, I mean, it's a whole different world when you're just in that attack mode and coming after hitters.
Mueller, he struck out Alonso and Conforto consecutively with 2 on in the third inning, then got that double play in the fifth.
Yep.
Riley made a real nice play on that one. But Mueller said of those situations, he goes, that was awesome. That's what you want. I mean, I want to be in those situations. I want to have those now so that hopefully by the end of the year, I'm even more comfortable in that situation. But I mean, he talks about it so excited. It's like a kid, man. He's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, this kid's really, you got a lot of energy and a lot of confidence, man. He's not at all scared of these moments.
Well, that's the mindset you have to have. You know, you have to want to be there. If you get into those situations and you don't want to be there, it's a wrap. You're going to get hit. You know, anytime you're timid or scared or trying to do too much. But I heard a quote the other day. I heard a guy, I think it was a basketball coach, saying pressure is a privilege. Uh-huh. And you know, that's, you work so hard to be in those situations and it's a privilege to get to, you know, work through them. But that mindset right there, you know, just putting that spin on it, that pressure is a privilege, you know, not something that's forced on you.
Yeah.
that's the mindset you have to have. And it seems like, you know, it's impressive for me, his first year in the big leagues, to already be embracing those situations and wanting to be in them. And, you know, some guys say that and then they give it up every time. And you're like, I don't know if you mean this, but when he keeps getting out of it, it's a pretty easy sell.
He struck out Conforto swinging at a slider and a 10 pitch at bat. Conforto had fouled off five straight pitches and then took ball three. And then Mueller said, I finally threw the good slider to Conforto on 3-2, which I was trying to throw about six pitches earlier. He said, I was really excited about that. That was a big moment in the game right there. Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors. Toussaint, 1.32 ERA in two starts, 15 strikeouts with two walks in 13 and two-thirds innings. And this was after the two starts at Gwinnett. See, he had been on the IL since the end of spring training with a shoulder scapula strain. It was like a grade two. It was not just a little bit of inflammation. It was a pretty bad strain. So, but he'd been on the IL, came back, made a few rehab starts, and the last two at Gwinnett, he really turned it up, and that's when they said he's ready. But he's got when you combine those last two with the first two in the bigs, that is. I had these numbers right here. I mean, it's wow. It's like the strikeouts to walks is through the roof. Let me see where this is. I have that right there. So that's this is the guy that they had waiting for. This is the guy that the Arizona drafted in the first round 7 years ago when he was 17 years old, and then they traded him to the Braves when the Braves paid like $10 million of Arroyo's contract when he was done. They basically bought Tukey. They got Tukey in that deal. They paid $10 million for a first-round pick, and this is how highly they thought of him at the time when Coppy was the GM. He's finally looks like that guy that everybody had projected, and he's still only 24 years old, man.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so tough, because 2 months ago, if you would have said we're trading Tukey, people would have said, okay, yeah, it's about time. But then a guy pitches like this, and do you want to cash in on that and watch him go do this somewhere else and look like an idiot? Or do you, you know, I mean, if I was a GM in that position, it'd be, you got to believe in your scouts, I guess, but it'd be so hard to make that decision on him right now, because his stock's finally, like, he's finally showing what he can do, but there's no way you can trade him pitching like that.
No way. No way. Yeah. This is what you waited for. So if you traded him, you'd be like, you went through all the bad times with him and the rehabs and all that. And now you're going to trade him and you've developed him, let him go somewhere else. And he's figured things out. No, I think you pencil him into rotation for next year, man, him and Mueller both. Mueller, by the way, 1.90, he made his debut as a reliever in that game against Boston, gave up four hits, two runs. It was like, okay, you could tell he was like nervous and overthrowing in that game. Then he comes back. His next game is a starter. He's made five starts. In his five starts, he's 1.90 ERA. He's allowed 11 hits, five runs, one homer, 13 walks, 25 strikeouts, and 23 and two-thirds innings. The walks are a little high, but nothing like he had in the minors. And when the hits are that low, you can live with that. He ain't giving up. His whip is really low.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the whip. Walks will catch up with you at some point, but he could keep tuning that in.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's same thing, you know, that just shows again that the stuff's there, and he should have the confidence to challenge guys if he's only given up that many hits. But I mean, he's been really impressive in his stuff. You know, I didn't know he had those breaking balls when he was coming up, because all you hear about is the fastball.
Right. Because 100 miles an hour, that's all you hear.
Yep. Over and over. And everybody, you know, I don't even get excited about it, because it seems like everybody they call up now, you know, I want to see him pitch. But even his first start he made, when I saw him throwing two different breaking balls, and they were tight and hard and late, I was like, all right, this dude's got a shot.
Yeah, his slider and his curveball is what's going to make him great, not the fact that he can throw upper 90s.
Yep.
Dansby had a great quote. He said, we always knew the stuff was good. It was just a matter of getting it over the white thing laying on the ground. He's done a great job with that.
Yep.
Because they'd seen this guy like in spring training and shit, you know, and they'd heard about him and everything. When they see him in spring training, and he's just he's throwing 100, and everybody's like,
cool,
this guy's great, but until he can throw strikes, he's not going to help us. So That's the big developments for the Braves, I think, in the last few weeks. Obviously, the devastating development was Acuna's injury, but to see Toussaint and Mueller come along has been really big. And obviously, Freddie. I mean, since Freddie's first month and a half, the guy's flipped the switch and he's Freddie Freeman again. And if he keeps this up the rest of the season, he's going to be back in the MVP talk again.
I know.
Tatis has got 30 homers and all that. But if Freeman does this and somehow the Braves win the division, because he's put the offense on his shoulders, especially since Acuna got hurt. His numbers are crazy, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was hitting around 200 a month and a half into the season.
195.
Yeah.
Here's his numbers that I had right on Toussaint, by the way, including his last two starts at Gwinnett and his first two against the Padres and Phillies. Two good lineups, by the way. You know, it's not like he's facing the Pirates or D-backs or whatever. He's got, in those four starts, he's got 33 strikeouts and six walks and 25 and two-thirds innings.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you tell me he's having these great starts at AAA, I don't get too excited.
Right.
But, you know, you want to see it in the big leagues. But coming up and doing the same thing, you know, that's telling you that, for a guy like with his stuff, it doesn't really matter what league he's playing in. You know, it's just about making pitches and competing.
The other big thing for the weekend was Smiley's knee. You know, he left that game after four innings with some knee pain, tightness that he'd never felt before. But MRI was fine, and he's throwing again. I mean, he didn't miss any time, and he's supposed to make his start here against the Mets. So that's huge when you consider how well he's pitched. I know everybody gave up on him earlier, and he's still got a bad taste in their mouth from how all the homers he gave up early. Fact is, listen to these numbers. He's 5-0 with a 2.40 ERA and a 6.67 opponent's OPS his last eight starts. Braves won seven of those games. He was 2-3 with a 5.98 ERA and an 8.60 opponent's OPS in his first nine starts. Braves lost seven of those games. He's given up three homers in 41 and a third innings in his last eight starts after giving up 14 homers in 46 and two-thirds in his first nine.
he's like the starting pitcher version of Luke Jackson. if he could probably finish the year with a 1.6 ERA in the second half, and there'd still be an amount of people that don't believe
exactly
in him.
that don't trust him, that are waiting for him to have one bad start and go, I told you. Yeah.
That's how it goes. So you got to embrace that as a player.
Freddie was hitting 195 with a 733 OPS on May 7th after 31 games, right? And Chipper told him, hey, you know, I had a season where I hit 240 or whatever. And Freddie was like, I don't want to have a season where I hit 245 with 30 home runs. And it was like, we're thinking, well, you might have to accept that. But he knows himself better than we do, because if you look at his numbers now, you would never know that he started back, because his numbers are like right where they should be. That's how good he's been since. He's 68 games since then. He's hit 333 with a 425 OBP, 989 OPS, 16 homers, 40 ribbies, 40 walks, 50 strikeouts, and 299 plate appearances. And the thing is, he's gotten better as they've gone deeper and deeper, and especially since Acuna got hurt. Last 28 games, listen to these stats, man. 419. Seven homers, 500 OBP over 28 games. It's like softball, man, like college baseball. A 676 slugging and an 1176 OPS over 28 games.
I feel like he has a slump every year. You know, I feel like it. But one of the things about baseball is it's always better to have that slump in August or June. You know, once your numbers are kind of established, you know, anytime you start off a season shitty, like, and in a slump, everybody's going to think you finally are done. And that's one of the biggest obstacles as a player too, is just, you know, quieting that noise, not listening to it and sticking with your plan.
Yeah.
Him being around long enough, I think it was probably pretty easy for him to just stick with his game plan. Know he was still hitting the ball hard, but all that outside noise when you start a year off in a slump is, it's hard to deal with. But he's, you know, I mean, this is what he does every year. His numbers look like every other year right now.
By the way, he talked about early on, we were talking about how unlucky he was, and everybody's like rolling their eyes, you know, people that maybe don't believe in BABIP and all that kind of thing. But other players were saying he's hitting the ball as hard as ever, you know, but people just want results. Well, look at this. Consider this. He's got a 361 batting average on balls in play in those last 68 games. That is literally double what he had in his first 31 games. When he hit 195, his BABIP in those games was 181.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's what's hard, because that's, everybody always says that, you know, it'll even out. And some years it just doesn't. But most years, you know, I mean, he's starting to get some cheap hits too.
Right,
And some balls are falling in, dribblers in the infield, he's beating out, little stuff like that. And it is evening out, but it's hard to believe in that and not start changing things when you see that 195 up on the scoreboard.
Yeah. Man, what do you think about Dansby? We've talked about him. He's really, you know, he went through that bad stretch and he's hit a lot better lately. He made that play last night, that backhand play, that really terrific pick, man, to start that double play, a big double play, obviously, to end it. You know, I know metrically people say his metrics are not good defensive, but I was talking about this with Mark Bowman last night. That's the one analytics which I've not come around to, is defensive metrics, because while you look at some war, defensive war, or defensive runs saved, or range factors, and some guys you go, yeah, that's right, that he is that. Other guys you look at and go, huh? That's not the guy I'm watching. And I'll be a dinosaur here, because to me, defensive, I trust the eye test on defensive more than I do defensive metrics. Watching a guy, if I can watch him play every day, I trust that more than I do looking at metrics.
Yeah, one of the things, remember we had Mark Simon on, he was talking about they have somebody watch the game and decide if the guy should have made the play or not.
Right.
I don't know. I've always struggled with it, just because the defensive positioning is so huge.
Yes.
You know, it where the guy starts and all that. And I just, I don't know how he's confident in it. You know, I mean, he said they take that into account, but it's a tough one, because Freddie never scores that well either. And for me, it's like, I don't know if I'd take any first baseman over Freddie.
Well, last night, I say that because Mark asked Snit a question about Dansby's defense. And somebody immediately said on Twitter, Dansby's got below average in this, whatever the metric was. And I'm looking at Mark and I going, say what you want about Dansby at the offense, because it needs help. I mean, he's below average offensively a lot of the times. But his defense is strong, man. I think he's one of the better shortstops in the league defensively. I just do. I'm not saying he's the best. Snit thinks he should win a gold glove. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's top half.
You never watch him and think, like, man, you know, for a shortstop, he's not that good defense. You know,
right. He's really good.
Even talking about his bat, you know, when you talk about his bat, I'm like, yeah, but he's a shortstop. You know, when he's not raking, he's still
– right.
Shortstop's supposed to be defensive first, you know, and if he was down 7-8 in the lineup versus having to move up because it's so thin.
Unfortunately, that's changed. The whole perception of shortstops has changed so much in the last 10 years, because you're getting so many good hitters at short now, you know?
Yeah.
Used to, you could get by short. I mean, like the Ozzie Smiths of the world, hitting 250 your whole career and, you know, never hitting for power. Dansby strikes out way too much, I think, and his OBP of 296 is way too low. He does have a career high 17 homers, though. He's giving you some big hits, and he's played all 100 games, league leader. He's out there. That's big.
That is big.
Guys that play every day is big, man. He wants to play every day, and he's had some injuries in the past, so he's showing that when he's healthy, he wants to play every day.
Yeah.
That said, I don't know if he's your guy long-term or not. Brazek got to decide that. Is there more there offensively? Because he shows signs of it, but he's hitting 240 with a 296 OBP, and he's third in the league in strikeouts with 113. That's a lot of strikeouts, man, in 375 at-bats for a shortstop.
I wonder if he's just embracing the way guys
get
paid now and get jobs, you know. If you play solid defense at shortstop and hit 30 homers.
Yep. He went to Vandy. He's smart. So maybe that's it.
Maybe he's just like, you know what? I tried grinding at bats and I hit 271 one year. Nobody cared because I hit 10.
Yeah.
I'm getting 30 this year.
I think you could do a lot worse. In other words, I think you can win championship with him there if you have plenty of other guys. He gives you a lot. He gives you a lot of intangibles, that kind of thing. You know he's going to play. You know he's not going to cause any problems. He's going to embrace his teammates, you know, and all that. So they got to decide, obviously. I mean, it's only now that they've waited to give him an extension. I don't even know where they are with that, what they're going to do. But
somebody will pay him.
Yeah, he's going to have a long career. There's no doubt.
Makes it to free agency. Somebody's going to pay him.
Yeah, he's not going to get $100 million or anything, but he's going to get a good contract.
So you never know. He's not that old.
No, he's not. Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. Hey, I wanted to ask you real quick. This is the 10th year anniversary today of the Jerry Mills call at the plate, the Pirate game, the 19-inning game. This is it. The 10-year anniversary.
That was right. That was today, huh?
Yeah, July 27th.
All I remember about that game is Clint Hurdle's face turning purple. It wasn't even red. It was purple. I thought he was gonna physically assault him.
Yeah.
That was enough, just ready to go home.
Jerry Mills, they say, you know, the other ump said, you know, we looked at the replay afterwards and we all thought, you know, with the naked eye that he missed the call. And afterwards we're looking at it going, I don't know. Did he tag him? Because, you know, people have super slow-mo'd it. Said that he actually, if you look, somebody made a point, and I do believe this. If he made the same call today and they looked at it on replay, they would not overturn it. Which would make it even worse, probably, you know?
That'd make it even worse.
But they would not be able to say there's irrefutable evidence to overturn that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a crazy game. What was that, the 19th inning?
Twice.
Yeah.
What do you remember about it? You're obviously in the bullpen?
No, I pitched that game. I pitched like 7 innings before that or 10 innings before that.
You're one of the 8 pitchers the Braves used in that game.
Yeah, and I think Christian Martinez might have gone 6 innings. Six. And then Proctor was in. C-Mart coming through. He was ideal long man because you could just beat the crap out of him, and he was always into it.
6 inning relief appearance.
And I think he might have got a hit in that game, but I know Proctor did.
Yeah, he got the game winning hit. That was him.
Yep. And
do you remember what he did when he hit it? He
fell down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the pitcher was yelling to the catcher to tag Proctor.
Yep.
But the catcher's too worried about arguing with the ump. He's going, what? You know, because the call. He's thinking the game, you know, he's not worried about the double play. Because he sees the safe call.
I would love to see what happened if that play was reviewed, because you're probably right. They probably wouldn't overturn it.
Right. But I can't imagine anybody ever making that call. You know, that's one time.
Well, they wouldn't overturn it, but it would be out.
Right. Right.
The official call would be out 99.9%.
Because with the naked eye, there's no way you could justify that with the naked eye. He could not see that, whether, you know, it looked like he tagged him twice, but certainly once, you know.
His slide barely even made it to the plate.
No, it's insane. I remember we're sitting there in the press box watching it going, what?
Oh, we were too. We were too, because we were like, shit, I guess we won. But I don't even want to win like that.
It was 2 in the morning, man. It was 2 in the morning. I remember, and there was so much to write about that game. I remember driving home, and I distinctly remember when I got home, the sun was just starting to come up and there were people eating breakfast at McDonald's near my house. It was like 5:30.
Damn.
Cause there was a lot to write about in that game. That was back in the day, man, at the newspaper. We were writing a ton of stuff about that game. You know, you had to get the umpire, the pool reporter from getting the umpire and both sides talking about it. It was crazy. And remember the little girl yelling for the Pirates all night long?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She had the sign. People on TV were like, who is that yelling?
The whole game.
A lot of them thought it was an old lady or somebody. It was a little girl. She was yelling nonstop, man.
Yeah. I was watching the Mariners game. Well, I was trying to watch it, but I blacked out. But I was watching some of it. They had a game that reminded me of that Brooks Conrad game last night. They were down 7-0 and wound up hitting a grand slam in the bottom of the eighth to go ahead. They kind of got one of those teams. And that's the thing. I think they're 6 games over 500 and they're still 6 games back.
Yeah.
You know, and in just a tougher division. But I was watching that. It reminded me of that Brooks Conrad game. That's the one that I always think of when I just think of those teams we had and how much fun it was Brooksy hitting that opposite field home run to walk him off.
Against the cool Reds?
One. Yeah.
What was that, nine runs in the ninth inning? How many runs?
I think it was 8-0. I think it was 8-0, and we came back.
Wow. Yeah, Jerry Mills got death threats after that. Somebody published his home address and phone number on the internet.
Oof.
Said he had like security at home, but on the road, he was like, he'd get relentless. People were relentless on the road and everything.
I mean, okay. I think he told himself, is this, if there's any way I can call anybody safe to end this game?
Exactly. That's what we said.
That was predetermined that I want to go home.
If he did that to the Pirates right now, I don't think he'd get death threats. People would be like, yeah, whatever. That was stupid.
Well, yeah.
Not many people would be up watching it for one thing.
Whatever.
Anyway, so yeah, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Jerry Mills call. There was a good Nesbitt, one of our reporter in Pittsburgh, wrote a real good story about it. So if you guys want to go online and read it, it's pretty good. Good stuff from all the characters involved. Proctor didn't even know, wasn't he supposed to pitch that day?
I think he was down, but
yeah,
19 innings. You're an old vet.
And you're pitching for Bobby Cox. He ain't bringing in a position player.
No, it was Freddie. I think it was Freddie.
Oh, Freddie, that's right. Yeah, 10 years ago. Yeah, that was already Freddie, yeah. Freddie, that's the year you replaced him, right?
Yep, first year with Freddie. Yeah, when you're a vet, too, it's like, I know we told you we're down, but we're going to need you to get some spikes on. We don't care if we break you.
Oh, man. All right, well, three more games here in New York, and we keep saying this, but the season's coming down to this. It is like, it's coming down to it and keeps getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And now we're in this funnel. It's at the end of the funnel, and it is three games are going to, I don't know if it's going to decide these three, whether the Braves make a move or not, because I think they've already decided they're trying to make moves. They're just not going to, you know, they're not going to give away a ton of prospects, but they never were, you know, they're going to try to win now, but also do something that helps them for the future. In other words, get guys that are under contractual control. But if they can make a big move to get a guy that's under control for next year, I think they'd do it. I just don't think they're going to give up any the very elite prospects. But
you might not have to. That Cronenworth trade to San Diego, man. It's like
some of these guys are getting moved for Frazier trade. A lot less than you think they would get. Frazier, yeah, you thought he would draw at least a one really elite prospect or two. It ain't happening. So. But I don't think people think Frazier's an elite player anyway. He's having a really great year.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not a guy that's going to, you know, win MVP or hit 40 home runs or anything. He's a really good player, but.
No, but it used to be any legit, especially an all-star, any legit major league player, you were getting something for him.
And just started in the all-star game. Yeah. And he's got under control too. It's not even a free agent. I just think back to the Teixeira trade and how,
Nobody wants to do that ever again.
It'll never happen. I mean, if it happened right now, people would be like, oh, my God, the general manager was drunk, you know, which is what we thought when Copy made the trade the night that they fleeced the Diamondbacks and got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dansby and Ender. I mean, that trade still looks incredibly one-sided, but it doesn't look as one-sided as it did a few years ago when Ender was an all-star and Dansby was looking like he's, you know, on the way up to becoming an all-star shortstop himself. But it still was incredibly one-sided.
The play you already got out of those guys, though.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You got three good years out of Ender.
You know?
And you've got solid play out of Dansby. So, yeah, it led to Dave Stewart getting fired. So, all right. Well, we'll do this again on either Friday right after the trade deadline. We'll figure it out. We're not going to do it Friday morning because there's no sense doing it as the trade deadline's going. So, we'll see. After the dust is cleared, we'll discuss where the Braves are and what's ahead for the rest of the season. 7:55 is real. We're out.